Welcome to Step Into the Story. Incredible conversations of how the Bible changes lives, changes families, and changes communities across the globe. And here's your host, Phil Tuttle of Walk Through the Bible.
Welcome to Step Into the Story. Each time we get together, I get to sit down with someone and we explore the intersection of their story and God's story. And sometimes it's somebody that I'm meeting for the first time. Other times, like today, my guest, Ron Clausen. Ron, I guess you and I have known each other now. I was doing the math and I think it's like 35 years now we've known each other. Can you believe it's been that long?
Somehow we blinked and the years went by, didn't they, Phil? I've sure appreciated your friendship over the years and appreciate your ministry there at Walk Through. You and Ellen have been the gifts that keep giving to Ron and Roxy over the years and also to our ministry here at RHMA.
So we're going to be talking a lot about your ministry, but I want to go back in time before that, because on this podcast, I mean, my vision for it has always been that we talk about not only does there come a time when God opens our eyes and we go, God, I want you to be part of my story. I welcome you into my story. But that ultimately God wants us to even move beyond that and realize it's not about my story. It's about his story, and that we find that God somehow is able to take our little stories, but they're significant, and he writes us into his epic story. And Ron, your life just epitomizes that. So let's go back. Some of this, I don't even know the answer to some of these questions. Attorneys are always told, never ask a question you don't already know the answer to. And I don't know the answer to this. Tell me about your growing up years, your family of origin, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I had the privilege of being raised in a Christian home, Christian parents, and attending a church where a clear gospel was presented and which I responded to as a child. And then later when I was a teenager, I reaffirmed that faith that I had as a child. I kind of like to view that as my adult decision to trust Christ, just making sure that it was my faith and not hitchhiking on my parents' faith. And during my formative years, I had an uncle in my life who was he was a pastor. He was very kind. He was gracious. He was caring. And often I just said to myself, I want to be like him when I grow up. And when I was 16 years old, a high school junior, I discovered that there was something that had been lacking in my Christian experience up until then. I decided to attend church with my girlfriend at the time. And that morning, I experienced something that had to have been rare up to that point. The pastor, my girlfriend's pastor, opened his Bible and he preached his way through a text. And I thought to myself, that's what ought to happen on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And that was not part of my experience up until that point. And from that moment on, I determined that I wanted to find out where that pastor had gone to school to learn how to preach and teach the Bible like that, and decided that I was going to go to that school. It was kind of a simplistic decision in some ways, I think, at the time, but God in his sovereignty used that. And that's how I ended up at Dallas Seminary and then ultimately into pastoral ministry.
So that girlfriend have a name?
Yes, but it's not my wife, Roxy.
Okay. You kind of dropped off at the end of that, and I thought, dangerous question, but we got to know. So when did you and Roxy meet?
So the irony of it is that Roxy also attended that church, but it was a very large church, and we really just kind of knew of each other until we both separately decided to attend John Brown University in Northwest Arkansas. That was close to where Roxy's roots were, though she and I both were raised in Phoenix. So the long trips back and forth, we got, as we're carpooling, we got to know each other really well and became friends and ultimately started dating. And we've been married now for quite a few years.
How many?
Let's see, this year it's going to be 47.
Wow. You're a few ahead of us. That's outstanding. So you get your training at Dallas Seminary, and you and I have those roots in common. That's all three of Walk Through the Bible's presidents have been alums of Dallas Seminary. Bruce Wilkinson, who founded the ministry, Chip Ingram, that led it for 5 years, and me as well. So we share those roots in common. After Dallas, I mean, did you go back to a nice big church like you had grown up in and go back to serving in the city, or what did God have planned for you?
Well, I have to say that through our years in seminary, we anticipated that that's what we would do. I was smart enough to know that I probably wouldn't end up being the senior pastor of a large church like I had then become a part of, the same church that I attended as that day when I first heard the pastor preach the word. But I thought, well, I could end up as a number five guy on a five member pastoral staff, and then we'll just kind of see what happens from there. But interestingly, my last year of seminary, as I began to look at opportunities, I quickly came to realize there were very few multi-staff opportunities, but there were a ton of solo pastor opportunities. Mm-hmm. And at the placement director at that time, he said, "Ron, we need to have a cup of coffee. We need to talk." And I just said, "I'm not ready to be a solo pastor." And he looked at me and he said, "Ron, if you're going to wait until you're ready, you'll never do it." Mm-hmm. And then he said, "You know, a solo pastor is not a bad place to cut your teeth on ministry. It's a more of a relational atmosphere. So you're kind of moving into something that feels like family." He said, "People tend to be more laid back. They tend to be more forgiving," which was something I needed a lot of in my early years of pastoral ministry. And so the short of it is we found ourselves candidating in a small town, a place called Brewster, Nebraska, up in the Nebraska Sandhills, very, very isolated rural community.
Well, now, when you say isolated, I've heard you tell stories from there before. Define, when you say isolated, what you mean. You don't mean you were the only house on your cul-de-sac. What does isolated mean?
So Brewster had about 20 people in town. Our entire, I would guess, 40 square mile county had 600 people. There was no gas station anywhere close. Gas was delivered to a 300-gallon tank that sat on our front yard. Groceries were an hour away. It was isolated. It was one of the most remote rural places in our country.
Wow. So while you're candidating, I mean, lots of people have been through job interviews, but seldom is it you go live someplace for a long weekend or sometimes a week. I mean, did you and Roxy know right away? Did you both know that this was the place? Or was it, man, we're going to meet some nice people and get on a plane and go home and find out what God really has for us, because it sure can't be out here? I mean, where were you on that scale?
Well, I would say yes. Roxy and I knew right away that this was not a place that we wanted to call home.
Okay.
And that was after we had been there for maybe a day and a half. And I distinctly remember when I was in the shower on Sunday morning saying to myself, "Well, I'll just try to get through this day as best I can. I'll try to preach reasonably well. I'll be friendly to everybody. And then when we get back to Dallas, I'll just give them a call and tell them that we're not interested." So this place was pretty different pretty extremely different from what we were accustomed to. And we just were pretty sure that that was not where we wanted to spend the next years of our lives.
There are so many parallels. You and I have talked about this, of our experience in Cisna Park, Illinois, which is not near as isolated, but a town of 850. And that was exactly what Ellen and I thought. She had the giggles driving down the road to our first meeting with the search committee. I mean, we were listening to the grain reports on the radio, and she's like, "What's a pork belly? And why do they sell those? And who cares?" And, you know, and we meet all these people. They said they worked at the elevator. She goes, "There's not a building in the town more than two floors. Can we not push the buttons for ourselves?" And I mean, we're just like, I'm like, "Hon, get out, get back in your seat." She was like, had slid down underneath the glove compartment. And she's like, "Please, please don't make me come here. I cannot do this." And man, God changed our mind. He actually changed her mind first. But what changed your mind during that visit? How did God do that in both of your hearts?
Yeah, I'd say God did a similar work in both of us. So that Sunday morning was the first opportunity for us to meet the majority of the folks that were in the church there. We had just been in a few homes up till then. And as we got to meet the people, we discovered the spiritual needs in the area. We had people in the congregation who had actually moved in from somewhere where they had had a Bible teaching church, and they were just pleading with us to come and teach the Bible to them. I think at the same time, God just did a miraculous work inside of us. We found ourselves just falling in love with the people. And so that burden for reaching a community that was void of a Bible teaching church, along with a love that God was giving us for the people, really kind of won the day. And so when we got back to Dallas, and as we continued to give it some thought and prayer for a few days, when that official call came, our answer was, it was an easy answer to give. It wasn't the answer I thought I would give when I was in the shower that Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And we were ready to say yes. And that began a long journey into rural ministry.
So did you plant the church, or was it already established, or?
Yeah, it was an existing church. It was a church with a very checkered history, theologically speaking. Just really not a church that was rooted in scripture by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I know you had a long run there. How long did you live there in Brewster?
Yeah, actually, we weren't there real long. We were there just 4 years. Those were the farm crisis years of the 80s. And a third of our community had to leave the area. It was a heartbreaking time. Two out of three elders in our church went bankrupt. The church just wasn't able to support us anymore. And our savings were gone. And so the short of it is that our church yoked up with another church that was about an hour away, and they shared a pastor. And in God's sovereignty, we got a call about them from another church in Oklahoma. And we moved there and began a ministry there.
Okay. So, I mean, take us into, you know, we think of missionaries as doing cross-cultural ministry, but this was, you had to cross cultural barriers and borders. I've heard you tell some pretty hilarious stories. I mean, tell us about your boots. You can't serve there without a good pair of boots, I assume. You know, and it's not about them coming to you on Sunday morning as much as you becoming a part of their world. Tell us some of your favorite things that now are hilarious that at the time were probably, what are we doing here, God? I love to hear you tell stories. So the mic is yours, my friend.
Well, when we were still in Dallas anticipating candidating, we had heard that our prospective church was in ranching country. That made us think of cattle, which made us think of cowboys, which made us think of Western Wicker. And so we made our first ever trip to a Western store in Dallas, and just thought, well, obviously we're not going to be like them, but maybe we can at least sort of look like them. And so we got to the aisle where they had boots, and there were boots there with rounded toes, boots with pointed toes. And I looked at those pointed toe boots and I thought, those look terribly uncomfortable. I'd always worn shoes with rounded toes. So anyway, I bought a pair of rounded toe boots. And sure enough, when we got up to Brewster and that Sunday morning in church, there was not a man's dress shoe in the entire congregation. However, I was the only person that was wearing a pair of boots with rounded toes. A rancher later came to me and said, you know, a good boot will kill a cockroach in a corner.
You remember the class at Dallas Seminary that we dealt with that? Did you cut class that day? I mean, was that not part of your preparation or something?
I must have missed that class. Yeah. A lot of ministry for pastors as they head out from seminary is cross-cultural. And that was certainly true for us. It kind of caught us by surprise because I think we thought, well, this is America. They speak English. Surely we're all kind of the same. And that was kind of a naive assumption. We quickly realized that these people talk differently than we do, just as you kind of hint as you're telling your experience, just the language of farmers and ranchers is different. They think differently. Their work is different from anything that we were accustomed to. They even play different. I mean, their idea of recreation was to gather on somebody's ranch on a Sunday afternoon and shoot clay pigeons. I had no idea what clay pigeons were, and I'd never shot a gun in my life. And of course, the other thing that they were really into was hunting. And again, I had never done that either. So very much a cross-cultural ministry. And it took some time for us to learn the language and learn the culture and adapt and become more effective in ministry by doing so.
I mean, some of the people listening to this are probably pastors. Normally, we've got a good number of pastors that follow this podcast. And I mean, this idea of really it's incarnational leadership. It's saying, okay, you don't come meet me where I am now that I'm here. I'm entering your world just as God took on skin and, you know, came into our world as a dependent little baby. But this isn't just for pastors. I mean, this is for parents who are going, I don't get my kids. I don't get the world they live in. I mean, telephones used to have tails when I grew up. Now they don't even have tails anymore. They don't hang on the wall. The more powerful than the computers in the space shuttle are, our kids are holding in their hand with an iPhone. And it is a different world. So what you had to learn there is relevant to a whole lot broader segment of people than just pastors trying to fit in a place. It's saying if you want to reach and connect with people, whether that's a different generation, a different ethnic group, you know, whatever it is, let alone cross-cultural ministry, we got to make the adjustments. Can you think of, other than your boots, can you think of a couple of things that you did that may have seemed kind of small at the time, but you look back on it now and go, that was good that God prompted me to do that, because it started to build a bridge and we started to have more connection. Can you remember any of those times?
Yeah, we practiced a lot of hospitality. So we really quickly worked at developing relationships with people. And even by doing that, we had some cross-cultural kind of things happen that were sort of humorous. We invited a couple over. We thought we were inviting them for the evening meal. We called it dinner, and they thought dinner was the noon meal. And so, you know, they showed up at the wrong time. So there were constantly things happening that just kind of caught us unawares, but we just learned, you know, you got to have a good sense of humor when you're going into a culture that is different than yours. And you just have to realize that time and again, you're going to make a fool of yourself. And that's kind of just the way it is. Another thing I decided to do was to get out with the ranchers and work with them. And I was really thrilled. We had just been in Brewster for a few weeks, and actually a rancher in the community who I had begun to befriend invited me out to his ranch to work cattle. And I didn't even know what that meant. Cattle? I had no idea. But anyway, I got out there and he assured me he'd have a job for me. And sure enough, the job was to jump into the calf pen and wrestle calves into the chute, where then they could give them their shots and brand them and castrate them and that sort of thing. And so I, you know, I didn't have any instructions. I just thought, well, this should probably be fairly easy. So I jumped in the pen and went after my first calf. I grabbed it around the middle. And I quickly realized that this was not going to work. That calf was going nowhere as long as I grabbed it in the middle. And so anyway, there were probably 8 or 10 ranchers. They get together when they work cattle, help each other out as neighbors. And they were all leaning against the fence, enjoying the show that I was providing for them. And one of them showed me how to do it. You put one arm underneath the neck of a calf, and with the other hand, you grab the tail end of the calf, and then you can maneuver them into the chute. And of course, I discovered pretty quickly that the tail end of a calf is not necessarily the cleanest end, and that leads to a whole lot of other things that you got to kind of work your way through as you're adjusting to a different culture. So, but I worked a lot of cattle in my day, and I went hunting. I shot a few deer, and often would ride with the ranchers and the farmers as they were making rounds in the field on their tractors or combines. I'd go with them to cattle sales. That was a great opportunity just to hang out with them and have some quality time to talk with them. So we genuinely try to just work our way into their world. And you know what? They love to be our teachers. And mm-hmm. I think it was important that we kind of postured ourselves as students, and we invited them to teach us. And I think that was very helpful as we worked our way into that community.
And how glad are you and I both that social media did not exist back then? You know, so it was bad enough to have 8 or 10 guys leaning against the fence enjoying the show, but that definitely could have gone viral if they had captured that forevermore. Too bad about that.
That would have been a great video, yes.
So during this time, I mean, I'm in Cisna Park, Illinois. You're in Brewster, and later on in Oklahoma. And it's during that time that you and I first met. And in a minute, I want to pick up the story there, because God was birthing in both of us really cool visions at the time that we first met and got to know each other. We'll talk about that, but right now, listen to this. There's a resource from Walk Through the Bible that, you know, God doesn't just care about pastors and those who have some kind of official title, leaders in the church. The truth is he wants all of us to be people of influence and impacting other people. And here's a resource from Walk Through the Bible that I think you'll find really helpful in that. So check this out, and then Ron, I'll be back in a minute.
Do you need rescue? Rescue from fear, loneliness, addiction, feelings of inadequacy, fear that people are going to discover the real you. Can you help someone else find freedom? Walk with us as we discover the life of Moses in our new Bible study, Rescue, Leading Yourself and Others to Freedom, From 40 years of preparation in the wilderness to 10 plagues, to leading God's people out of Egypt to the 10 commandments, to dealing with the people's complaints and their disobedience and more, we'll learn how God rescued Moses from his fears and feelings of inadequacy, and how God worked in and through Moses to lead himself and God's people to freedom. Find out more about rescue at walkthrough.org/rescue. That's walkthru.org/rescue.
Well, welcome back to Step Into the Story, and continuing my conversation with a longtime friend, Ron Clausen. And Ron, when we took that break just now, you and I were both ministering in rural context, trying our best to fit in, not to say too many stupid things. I mean, I can remember going, man, Jesus talked about agriculture all the time. I better talk about agriculture more in my sermons. And some of those led to some really, really just pretty hilarious things, as I thought, surely I'm making the truth clear with this. And I know you had similar experiences, but it's during that time that you and I first met, and we met at a program at Dallas Seminary. This is years after we graduated there, called Leadership Evaluation and Development. And five couples were invited together for a week, and it was the acrostic spelled LEAD. And I don't know what your experience was with that. My view of it is, they kind of take your life apart, your family life, your marriage, your leadership style, your communication, your life vision. And we rotated around as couples to these different modules. And then in the evenings, we'd hang out at one of the professor's houses. And the goal was really that a lot of the coping mechanisms that we developed growing up that helped us to deal with life are the exact same things that limit your marriage relationship, limit your ability to do ministry God's way. And the goal was, can we accelerate people through that learning process? Because what got you here won't get you there. And we could do a whole show on that. Probably we should sometime. But what was the takeaway from that week for you? I know it was a defining week for Ellen and me, for sure.
And likewise for Roxy and me. So leading up to that week, even several years leading up to it, Roxy and I had a growing burden, not just for one rural community, but as we looked up and down the roads, we found that there were many communities that were void of a Bible teaching church. And God just laid that burden on our hearts. And we would talk by the hour, beginning back in Brewster, and then when we were in Oklahoma, many, many conversations. And often it would end up with something like, someone ought to do something.
Exactly.
And, we assumed someone else, because we assumed that rural ministry was kind of a stepping stone to get us back into our city, into our bigger church kind of ministry. But at some point, we looked at each other, and we said to each other, maybe the two of us ought to be two of those somebodies. Alongside that, I began to do a little bit of writing, a little bit of speaking, and that kind of was a background leading up to that week that you and Ellen and Roxy and I and three other couples spent together at the Howard Hendricks Center for Christian Leadership on Dallas Seminary. And for us, it was an exhausting week, and I don't know I've ever been so exhausted. It literally took us months, I think, to recover. But yeah, the biggest takeaway for us was us putting together a vision for making a difference in rural America at large, as opposed to just one community that we might be serving as a pastor and wife. And so we talked a lot of vision that week with our coach there. And the short of it is, we ended up being able to succinctly put that vision together on a piece of paper. And that piece of paper has been something that we've been striving to live out in our ministry from that day going forward.
Mm-hmm. And for Ellen and me, you know, it was, I think at that point I had maybe taught three or four Walk Through the Bible seminars. And I can remember in one of the modules, a guy named Pete Dyson was like, do you realize you light up when you talk about your ministry with Walk Through the Bible? Phil, you were not made to be a solo person. Everything you've ever done is in a team. And you just need to be open. At some point, Walk Through the Bible might want more from you than a few weekends a year. And I'm like, there is not a job there I'd be interested in. The only things I'd want to do. And I named three different roles, all of which were filled and nobody was going any place. And those have been the three jobs I've had here. So I don't know if you even remember this. You and I even had conversations about, you know, somebody needs to have input into guys than the couples like us who are in the U.S., but very cross-cultural. We're not prepared for this. There was no orientation program for this. You and I even talked about, should we start something like that? And I know you seriously considered that. God had a better idea. He brought you together with a ministry called Rural Home Mission Association, or RHMA, as it's usually called. Tell us about, I mean, RHMA predates both of us. Tell us about that mission and how God connected you there.
Yeah, so you're right. We left that week at Dallas Seminary thinking that we might launch a new ministry that would reach rural America for Christ. And as we were just giving thought and prayer to that, God in his sovereignty prompted the board of RHMA to make an inquiry of Dallas Seminary to see if they might know of someone who might come and serve as their director. And that's how we ended up at RHMA. And yes, RHMA has predated us by quite a bit. They're an 80-year-old organization. And the mission of RHMA is to plant and strengthen churches in small towns. And as we compared mission statements from what RHMA did to what we were envisioning God might do, we found ourselves to be very compatible. And so we made the big move from pastoral ministry to directing a ministry organization.
Mm. And RHMA, you and I have gotten to do some things together with them in the years that have followed, but I could have so used a ministry like that. You know, I mean, I was 100 miles south of Chicago, 24 miles from the nearest McDonald's. And I mean, Moody has a great pastor's conference. Willow Creek, I'd go to sometimes. And you hear the best speakers in the world. And you hear the most creative ideas. But there was that inevitable time when driving home, when I get to Iroquois County and then on down to Highway 49 and driving into Cisna Park and going, man, I feel small about what I'm doing here. I don't. A lot of what I heard, it's great and it's true, but I can't find a way to build a bridge from what I heard from all these really gifted mega church pastors to our environment here. A lot of folks listening to this are probably in smaller churches. This is where America goes to church. And what does RHMA do? You're still doing church planting and all, but especially the conference that's held, sometimes conferences in different states every year, for sure, one in Illinois. I've gotten to speak at, I don't even know how many of those, appreciate those opportunities. But what's your goal for when pastors from contexts like you and I are talking about get together? What do you want to do for them and in them?
Yeah, so part of the vision that we brought to RHMA just reflected what your experience was going to pastors' conferences. And we realized that there was a need for a small town pastors' conference, a conference that was very contextualized and tailored for pastors who are serving in rural ministry, pastors and wives both, because it's very much a team ministry. And so our desire during our conferences is to validate ministry in small places, because I think a lot of pastors wonder if they even ought to be there. Maybe there's something else that they ought to be devoting their lives to. Our desire is to encourage them, recognizing that there are unique discouragements, I think, in solo pastor, rural ministry contexts, and then also to equip, to provide that unique equipment, equipping that's so desperately needed for pastors who are serving in places that are very different from Chicago or New York City or Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know every time that I go to one of those conferences, I mean, it takes me back to my roots. And even though, you know, Walk Through the Bible is global, the vast majority of pastors that we serve around the world are, even if they're in a city, they may be having ministries very similar to that. And so I just treasure the partnership between Walk Through the Bible and RHMA. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think it's absolutely a match made in heaven.
Oh, absolutely. We are just so grateful that God and his sovereignty brought you and us together at that lead week in Dallas. And that began a friendship. And I have to say that I wouldn't be surprised if the majority of our pastors and wives who attend our conferences would say that you're their favorite. They love having you come and speak, and you connect so well with them and just communicate their language and from their world. And it's really appreciated.
Well, I appreciate that. That's encouraging. If people wanted to find out more about that conference or the ministry of RHMA, what's the best way for them to get that information?
Yeah, just simply go to our website, rhma.org. And if they scroll down, it won't take much scrolling. Go down just a bit. And on the right, you can click on a conference tab, and that'll tell you about upcoming conference ministries, including one that we've got coming here in April.
Yeah, there's one in April. If we get this podcast up in timely fashion, that one's in Morton, Illinois. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's in central Illinois. Sorry, I don't have the dates right here in front of me, but mid-April, and you can get the dates on our website.
Yeah, mid-April. And again, it's affordable and it's tailored. You will not feel small about yourself when you go home. As we kind of wrap up, you are at a season of change in your life. Talk about the leadership transition that has just recently taken place.
Yeah, we are going through something we haven't gone through up to this point in our lives. So I have transitioned as of February 1st out of the executive director position at RHMA. So my successor is now in place. We overlapped for a few months, and I continue to work for RHMA and am available to my successor if he seeks my help, and happy to do what I can to help him as he gets acclimated to a very different ministry. I'm really thrilled that Adam Kipp is my successor. He and I have had 15 years of ministry together. We've done lunch every 2 weeks for those 15 years. Do the numbers. That's like 300 lunches. We've processed a lot of life and ministry together. He's become like a son to me. And he himself has the pastoral ministry experience. He's been an RHMA board member. He's done a lot of things through RHMA. He's been one of our professors for our classes that we provide for seminaries. So he's sort of an outsider coming in, but he's also an insider. It's really
of
a perfect blend. And so the transition is going well, and just grateful to the Lord that in his sovereignty, he's clearly directing in all of it.
Mm. So I know recently you wrote a book that is in some ways kind of captures lessons of a lifetime. And again, not just for pastors, but for anyone who desires to connect well with other people. I think it's a book that is far beyond just about small town or rural ministry, but this is not native to your humble character, but plug that book for a second, because I think it's a winner.
Well, it was a book that's probably four decades in the making. Some of it coming out of my recognition of my own need. I would have benefited greatly from having a book like this early on in my ministry, as I was trying to cut and paste, you know, big church ministry into a small church context, and it just wasn't working very well. And at the same time, as I was feeling very small in that context and just insignificant, and struggling with all kinds of things like lack of resources, loneliness, those sort of things. And so over the years, I've been thinking about those things. I've been compiling notes. I have the unique perspective of having traveled to all 50 states. I have been on many, many back roads of this country, like probably few people in our country. I've rubbed shoulders with hundreds of small church, small town pastors. And so the book that I authored brings some best practices, some observations that I have seen from ministries in these contexts all over the country. So the book itself is titled Maximize, and the byline is leveraging the strengths of your small church. So it's trying to help us realize that, yes, while there are lots of strengths that large churches have, there are also strengths that we have in smaller churches. And I think we do well to really focus and capitalize on those strengths, rather than thinking about the can'ts of ministry, the things we can't do because we're not big or we don't have money or we don't have people. Think about what we can do and how God might want to use that to help a church have maximum impact in a community.
Mm-hmm. So as you are still in the process of unharnessing as your role as director of RHMA, what's the future hold for you and Roxy? I know it's not going to be playing golf 5 days a week, and I pray it's not going to be wrestling cattle 5 days a week. I'm not sure, though we would have video evidence this time. Maybe we ought to do that. But what do you see for the next season?
Yeah, Lord willing, I would like to do some more writing and make myself available for speaking opportunities should they come up. I am actually on faculty now at Dallas Seminary, so I teach on their master's and doctoral program, and I anticipate continuing to do that at least for the short term. So I think we'll stay busy, but it's not all clearly defined, but we're very much hoping that the Lord will allow us to have a fruitful retirement for His glory.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you the last word, and I'd really love for you, Ron, just to say a few words to the man or woman who's listening to us right now. And maybe they are in a small town, small church, rural church. Maybe they're not in vocational Christian ministry. Maybe they're a parent who's going, I raised my kids and they've gone away to school and they've just turned their back on the values I tried to build into them. I'm discouraged, or my career hasn't unfolded the way I want it to, or I'm afraid my life has and is being wasted. I mean, I think you and I have both had those dark nights of the soul. What would you say to somebody right now who's hurting and going, man, this is a guy and his wife who they were in a hard situation, but look how it ended up. I wish I wish I had hope like that, but I don't. What would you say to somebody right now who's listening to us?
Well, I guess I would say trust in the sovereignty of God for your life. Life doesn't always go the way that we want it to go. And we certainly have limited responsibility, perhaps, in how our life unfolds. But at the same time, we really are dependent upon the Lord to work in his own unique way, to take the good things and the bad things and to weave them together and make a tapestry that is hopefully beautiful for his glory. You know, going into rural ministry was not Ron and Roxy's wonderful plan for their lives. But as we look back now on 40 years of ministry, we see that it was God's plan. And in many ways, it has been wonderful. And I don't want to sugarcoat things. There have been many very difficult things as well. We've certainly had, as you just alluded to, many dark moments in ministry and in life where we've struggled. But when we've done that, we have endeavored to trust in God's sovereign direction and leading in our lives, and to just yield ourselves to him and whatever his purposes might be for us.
I cannot think of a better way to end this conversation than right there. It's not complicated, but it's also not easy to make that choice. And thank you for listening to this conversation today. I hope you are encouraged by what you've heard. Walk Through the Bible would love to walk with you through some of these experiences of life. Most, if not all, of what we go through, there's a character, a man or woman in the scripture who's already walked that path. The Bible says, Jesus, we don't have a high priest that can't sympathize or relate to us. He's had the same struggles as we have had, and yet without sin. And it is that invitation to do life together that I extend to you on behalf of Walk Through the Bible, and I think also on behalf of RHMA. We would love to help you any way that we can. And we don't have all the answers, but as Ron said earlier, we'd love to just learn from you and with you. That's why we get together each time here on Step Into the Story. And I hope that you'll be with us next time that we get together. We'll see you then. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for the Step Into the Story podcast, powered by Walk Through the Bible. We'd love to hear what you think by giving us a review on iTunes or Google Play. Also, don't miss a single episode by clicking the subscribe button. If you'd like more resources to help you explore and live God's Word in your daily life, visit walkthrough.org. That's walkthru.org. Walk Through the Bible. Take a walk. Change the world.